You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Our next guest was sentenced to 12 to 25 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. In December 2012, a man was robbed of cash and a cell phone and shot three times on Detroit's East Side. The victim's son used an app and tracked his father's stolen phone to a cell phone store in Southfield. And that's where the store owner identified Detroiter Conrad Montgomery as the person who'd sold him the phone. Based on this connection, Montgomery was found guilty and sent to prison. Today, we continue our series Compensating for Lost Time as we meet people who are eligible for compensation by the state for being wrongfully convicted. Last month, after numerous failed attempts in previous legislatures, Michigan became the 32nd state to offer compensation to those who've been wrongfully convicted and then exonerated. They're now eligible for $50,000 for every year they served in prison, plus other support services. So that means, if approved, Conrad Montgomery stands to receive nearly $150,000. We spoke with Conrad recently at his attorney's office in Detroit about the effort to clear his name. Conrad, tell us about the chain of events that sent you to prison. What was the crime you were accused of?
I was accused of armed robbery and attempted murder. One day, police knocked on my door. I opened the door for them. My sister's boyfriend was wanted. So they had been there before, so I opened the door like, he's not here. I was about to take a shower, so my clothes were unbuttoned. Like, he's not here. So I had an attitude like, why do y'all keep coming here? He's never here. And then they show a picture of me like, we're looking for people. I'm like, well, come right in, but I don't know what you're looking for me for.
And there was something to do with a cell phone that you were supposedly were linked to this?
Yes. Me and a couple buddies of mine, we were buying used cell phones. We had guys who paid more than reasonable prices for them. So we were buying up all the cell phones. We made ads, you know, legit, but not, it's not legit, but it wasn't anything malicious. Mm-hmm. So I bought a guy's cell phone. And I got questioned about it a lot after the fact. Like, well, why didn't you know this phone was stolen? Well, from my perspective, everyone has a lock on their phone. The phone didn't have a lock. Sold the phone the next day. And a month later, I got picked up. I had no idea what it was about. Nothing at all.
So here you are charged with these serious crimes. You're in jail, and then you're sitting in a courtroom in a trial. What was that like for you where you're saying, I don't even know what this is about?
I'm sitting in trial baffled, like, well, innocent people don't go to jail. That's my first thought. Like, well, they're going to figure this out. Somebody's going to come question me, and I'm going to straighten this out for them. But that never happened. I waited and waited and waited. And even big, I wrote everyone. I wrote the judge. I wrote the prosecutor. I wrote the victim. Come see me. I still want to look him in the eye. I had nothing to do with your misfortune. I'm sorry you think it was me, but you got the wrong guy. You only realize it happens when it happens to you or someone close to you. I had no idea innocent people went to jail until I was the innocent person in jail.
I know from what I read that there was actually your own self-harm proved you weren't anywhere near where the crime is, but that was overlooked?
It was said that maybe I could have did. I was such a clever guy with cell phones. You know, imagination stuff, if you ask me. You know, I had kind of knew something about it. I knew a lot of guys got convicted on it on First 48 and things like that. I know the police used it. So I'm like, well, if they use it to catch guys, they can use it to exonerate people also. So, you know, I never wavered from the truth. I told them everything. And if they would have looked into the stuff properly, everything I said was corroborated by the cell phone evidence. Everything. Every person I told them to talk to, where I bought the phone from, you know, the victim's phone pinged in the area near the girl who I bought the phone's house. When the prosecutor said I had already had the phone within 24 hours of the crime, so to speak, I didn't even have the phone. And, of course, I could explain why the guy I sold it to said I sold it to him, because I sold him cell phones every day. He was confused on which one I sold him that day.
Take me to the moment when you heard the word guilty and the moment when you were sentenced.
Guilty was like this to me. My heart dropped. My head flew back. I can't believe this shit. Are you serious? But I'm a dedicated person. I knew it. I knew I wasn't going to stay in prison. I knew a lot of guys when I went there. Everybody was working out, doing whatever they were doing. I was getting little, not eating, but I read. And I pleaded to every organization, oh, you're convicted, we can't help you. Oh, you're convicted, we can't help you. Oh, you're convicted, we can't help you. And I would never stop. I'm writing everybody, every advocate program. I won't stop. There's no way in hell I'm going to give up. I got two kids to get back home to. And they were 3 and 5 when I left. And now, you know, our relationships are tarnished.
How so?
Well, my daughter, she thinks I show favoritism to my son, but he attaches more to me. But before I left, like, she never left daddy's side. She was daddy's little girl. Now she's, daddy, I need money. You don't need to do nothing. Just give me the money for it. And I don't like it, but they did that. They ruined a man's life for not listening. The police and the prosecutors say they do a thorough investigation. Well, I thought a thorough investigation was investigating both sides. They did a biased investigation in my case. They botched it. And a lot of people say, well, who do you blame? I blame everybody. I blame the judge. I blame my defense attorney. I blame the prosecutor. I blame the victim. I wrote everyone. I tried and tried and tried. While I was locked up, they asked me, like, well, you can't write the victim. I'm in jail. What the hell y'all gonna do to me? I'm gonna write whoever I wanna write. From my perspective, I was just trying to get to the source. Like, well, the judge is not working, okay? My lawyer's not listening, okay? Prosecutor's not listening. I'm gonna go straight to the source. I'm gonna go to this man. Mm-hmm. I wrote him, tell him, well, it's like bulletproof thick glass. When you come see me, I can't touch you. Mm-hmm. I just wanna look in your eyes and tell you this. Like, you got the wrong guy. Like, let's knock this out like men. Let's one-on-one, me and you. You don't have to hide behind the prosecutor. I don't have to hide behind anything because I didn't do it. So when the truth's on your side, you just want to blurt it out. You want to yell. But then when no one's listening, you're like, what the hell?
Comrade, what was your sentence? How many years were you sentenced to?
12 to 25 years in prison.
The idea of 12 to 25 years in prison for something you knew you didn't do must have been just indescribable.
Initially, it was heart-wrenching. Like, it's over with. Your life is through. Your kids are going to be grown. What are you going to do? But I was like, nah, this ain't going to work for me. I'm not doing this time. I gave it a year, though. Like, the process is long. Don't even expect quickness. Don't even expect anything fast. It takes forever.
When did the door open, and who opened the door to you being exonerated?
Again, I was in prison, and I was banking on the cell phone evidence. Like, I didn't have this guy's phone. They got to see that I didn't have his phone when they kept saying, like, they used this phrase in my trial. He had the phone within 24 hours of the crime, ladies and gentlemen. I remember this rang in my head over and over and over again. Like, he keeps saying that. I didn't have this phone. I didn't have it. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, if I can prove that I didn't have this phone, like he said it, I should be good. I should go home. So I dug in deep. A lot of guys are in there convicted using cell phone evidence. Guys were letting me see their stuff, and I was just looking over it, and I was writing experts. And a guy named Scott Ross from California sent me some information that was so vital. It gave me, like, the blueprint on how to read cell phone evidence. So from there, all I was looking for is information. I need this. I need this. I had every member of my family. Get this paperwork. I need it. I need this. I need you to do this. All I needed was stuff done. So, like I said, I was reading everybody's cell phone analysis reports, mm-hmm. and there was no expert in my case. So I'm finally getting to the bottom of this stuff, and I'm reading it like, well, wow, they read this wrong. They read that wrong. And then, like, once I can really read it, I'm like, everything I said, this cell phone is following it. So I had an attorney, and I'm geeked. Like, look, yeah, we need an expert. Mm-hmm. Let's get to this. And the guy tells me, well, I don't think that's going to be helpful. And I asked him, who the hell asked you what you think? I said, just do it. I asked you to do it. Just do it. So we went back and forth about this for maybe a month. He was like, I don't think I'm the lawyer you need. I said, you're right. I don't think so either. And by the blessing of God, I got Michael Waldo and Malika Ramsey Heath. Well, Malika led it up, but they were great. They listened. That's all you ask. Listen and help.
So with their help, it did finally come together. And all the work that you did. And you were out April of 2016,
yes.
And exonerated July of 2016. Take us to that moment when you walked out of prison. How long had you spent totally in prison?
A little bit under 3 years, mm-hmm. altogether.
So here you are walking out after losing the better part of 3 years of your life behind bars, knowing that this was wrongfully convicted. It was a mistake. So you lost years of your life and earning power and time with your children. And what did you get? What were you given to help you pick up your life as a free person again?
You know, when I first walked out, I wasn't free just yet. I still was bound by this case. They were still going to try me. But, like, sitting in prison, all you can do is think. I thought everything through. Like, I knew what they were going to do. I'm like, they're going to try to charge me again. How do I get around this? Mm-hmm. I know they're going to want to put me on tether and restrict my liberty. Like a curfew. What am I on curfew for? Mm-hmm. A bond is to ensure that you come to trial, not to restrict your liberties. I should be able to move as a citizen. So I looked statutes up and talked to my lawyer about that before I got out. Look, I don't want to be bound to the house when I get out. This is what happened. Like, I had a paralegal. Well, not a paralegal. But the guys who help you. Like, they work at the law library. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, my decision's coming back soon. Look it up. I'm in my cell. I'm in level 4. So I'm locked down 20 hours a day. Look my case up while you're at work. So he comes back 2 hours later and slides my case under my door. I'm like, I know he didn't slide me no denial under the door. He wouldn't have printed it out. You don't waste money in prison. So I knew right there, like, okay. So I read it. I'll go to the back page first. Reverse it, remand it. I said, okay, now I get to reading it. And I get one single tear out and tell my bunkie, like, I told you, I'm going home. I've been telling guys that for the longest. All the guys know I walk around with all legal work every day. Like, if anybody's going home, it's Conrad. When I did get out, I was like, okay, now here comes the next step. The next step was the curfew. Step after that was a new trial. How are you going to get around this?
You broke it down piece by piece by educating yourself, and you finally had lawyers that listened to you and believed in you. So finally, it comes. You are exonerated. You're out from under this. And I stop and I think that in Michigan, parolees get help with housing and medical care and job placement. But here, people like you exonerated after you spent years in prison unjustly. What did you get?
Initially, I got nothing. Once the exoneration came down, mm-hmm. it was good luck. The prosecutor told me good luck. But again, like, I was torn. Like, I knew I was how to get out of the trial the situation. My thing was to set the prosecution up to make it look malicious. Really, truthfully, that was my whole point. How can I make them look malicious? Okay, we can present them all the cell phone evidence that corroborates my testimony. Then I could present them with polygraphs that I've passed. So I told Gary, you want to take a polygraph? Absolutely. I have absolutely nothing to hide in this matter. Took one. It provoked them to give me another one. Of course, I passed that one. And then me, I don't trust the system. When I took the polygraph of them, I recorded it. And I wasn't supposed to, but I did. The guy told me you passed. I'm like, Gabby told me don't tell nobody, but I think I could tell somebody now. So once they told me I was a free man, they told me good luck. And I was like, no, this ain't all I get. There's no way. I'm like, why? I'm like, it's not my fault. I went to prison. Well, the prosecution, I said, no, someone has to be held accountable for this injustice. I didn't say, oh, send me to prison. I told you I didn't do it. If you would have listened, I said, I don't care who you blaming on. Because, like, I've seen several civil lawyers, and they tell me, well, you really don't have a case. And that's irritating. Like, are you serious? Even on your side, like, the people who's supposed to help you, it's still the blame falls on you. Like, well, it's your fault. How is it my fault? I told you where I was at. It's not my fault.
I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, Conrad. Are you angry?
I don't know what I am, because I'm like, my skin is crawling right now thinking about it. Like, it's just, I got a evil, a hate in me that I try to control. I'm vindictive. Like, I'm real cautious about what I do now. I keep all my receipts everywhere I go. I make sure, like, okay, I'm on camera here. They won't get me like this again. And that's crazy. You got to think like that. And now I'm like, well, if somebody wants to know where I'm at, I'm definitely going to have some type of proof. I might, now was that Snapchat. I Snapchat everything, everywhere I'm at. Because they don't want to listen. If you're not on camera, you're hit.
What has been the hardest thing for you about rebuilding and reclaiming your life as a free man?
Relationships, personal relationships. Like, my two older sisters, we haven't spoke since, I think, April of 2012. Because, like, I had bonded out. And the bond was ridiculous. I think it was like $15,000. I put down half. I had made a $500 payment when I got out. And my sisters didn't realize, like, if you don't pay this, I have to pay it. But I was going to pay it. They were like, well, we don't want that responsibility. And they never told me this. So I just go to court. And they're like, well, we're revoking your bond. So I go back to prison. And that killed our relationship. And my kid's mother got a new guy. They live together. You know, relationships were torn. No. I mean, I miss my kids to death. I mean, I still took real good care of them while I was gone. That's the only thing I could do. They used to ask me, like, Daddy, you still got all the money? How you buy me this while you in jail? I was like, well, I tried. I don't take for me. I took for them. Like, anything I needed, like, that commissary could wait. I'd rather my daughter have, what's that, American Dial?
What's your personal goal for, let's say, the next 5 or 10 years? Where do you want to take yourself? Where do you want to see yourself?
I want to blossom. I want to be great, really. I really want to speak out and really, I still want to talk to this guy. I still want to this day. It's been what, 4 years? I still want to, like, and I want to tell him, you owe me too. Lawyer fees, all this, bonds. You don't get none of this back. The $50,000 is a nice start, but it's not enough.
People listening to this might say, you know, the victim didn't do that to you. The system might have. But do you feel like the victim kind of deserves some of the blame?
In my case, because I reached out to him. The man wants to speak to you face to face. He wrote you several letters. Mm-hmm. Stop hiding. You said I did it. Look me in the eye. Let's talk this out. Mm-hmm. It's not... People say, well, $50,000, this should go off of what they make. You don't know what a person can make. What they take from you is your potential. You could have hit the lottery. You don't know. You were gone. You were restricted from anything. You don't know what a person could have did. You could have got a better job. You don't know. That's what the payment is for your ability to grow. Your loss. It's not just because, oh, you had a job making $50, $60, $10 a day. It don't matter what you were making. It's the opportunity you lost. You lost so many opportunities being locked up for something you didn't do. Prison is hard for guys who did it. So imagine someone who didn't do it. It's extremely hard. It's extremely, extremely hard. Level 4 is a harsh place. Like, these guys are, like, my first day in prison, I seen a guy get stabbed and I didn't know what to think. I'm like, are you serious? I didn't even know he had gangs. It was all so new to me. This wasn't my life. So I was shocked. Like, whoa, this is crazy. But I adapted.
I can tell. We wish you luck. We do wish you luck, comrade, as you reclaim this new life and put what happened behind you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.